Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Seen a lot of stars take the step forward during this postseason. The youth has been on parade in the NBA, but what if it doesn't look the way that we're used to? What if it doesn't look the way that we like? How do we respond and react? We got a masterclass in that from last night's game. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Jason Fitz hanging out today. Janae Agumbike off with her responsibilities for the Sparks. You can normally hear Jason 7 to 9 Eastern on Spain and Fitz here. And Jason, we had a lot to get to today. I want to play the sound of Scottie Pippen on with Dan Patrick earlier today. Some comments that he made about Phil Jackson comments that you cannot take back. And now all we can really do with it is try and figure out where it comes from and where it goes. Because Scottie Pippen has been in the news a lot lately, and we're trying to figure out where all of this animosity comes from. We've also got a conversation to have about the end of the game. What went on for the Milwaukee Bucks, who now took a 2-1 series lead over the Hawks. They win at State Farm Arena last night. And I know, Jason, that Trae Young, that ankle, which I believe has now been diagnosed a bone bruise on his foot that they're going to deal with here. He's questionable for game four coming up. But for the end of game on the other side, the story for Milwaukee was Chris Middleton, absolutely unconscious, especially from three, that 0-for-9 performance in game one, a distant memory now. And people pointing out, we had the Batman-Robin conversation with him and Giannis again. Jason, is this one of those things where, kind of like LeBron back in the day, making the right basketball play, passing in key moments late in series, in the postseason, in Miami, in Cleveland, where we just kind of have to accept that this is something that works for this team, and this is something that, while it doesn't fit into our normal neat box of what a star should do at the end of the game, it fits for this team, and that should be good enough.
Yeah, I think it also works for Giannis. Like, we have to decide at some point what we want. Like, we scream and yell at everything KD does because of the burner accounts and because he seems sensitive. Then you got somebody, you know, we screamed and yell about everything that LeBron did through the process. Did he take enough shots, or did he defer too much early in his career? We always find these things to yell about. Well, what if Giannis is just, as a person, pretty content with the way they do things and a little more chill and willing to dish over to a very hot hand? I mean, Middleton by himself outscored the Hawks in the fourth quarter. At some point, if Giannis is good with that and it helps him win a game, I don't know what we're yelling about when it constantly comes to, well, we need to see more of this and more of this and more of this. Do we? I mean, the Bucks seem to be doing the right thing right now.
The Bucks are doing the right thing right now, and I want to get into, because I think this can be just as much mentality as it is, like, very easy to see on-court basketball reasons for this. And so often, I think we try and lump every star player together. I want to touch on something in a little bit that Quentin Richardson said with us on this show. We will get to plenty of that coming up about the Milwaukee Bucks. Here at ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer gives you multiple quote options so you can pick what's right for you. See for yourself at progressive.com. But we were talking before about Scottie Pippen, and for anyone that missed it, Scottie Pippen is out here promoting a new bourbon that he is a part of. I'm not sure in what capacity officially, if it's just his or what have you, but he's been out promoting this. We've seen him getting into battles with Kevin Durant online over things that he said about him. Scottie Pippen went on the Dan Patrick Show earlier today and was talking very publicly about his disdain for Phil Jackson for drawing up that famous inbounds play for Tony Kukoc instead of him on a team that he felt was his. And it ended up bringing him to this place where Dan Patrick brought up some comments that he made accusing this of being a racial decision. And here was Scottie Pippen and Dan's back and forth from earlier.
But have you talked to Phil about this? Because by saying a racial move, then you're calling Phil a racist.
I don't got a problem with that.
Do you think Phil was or is?
Oh, yeah. I mean, do you remember Phil Jackson left the Lakers, wrote a book on Kobe Bryant, and then came back and coached him? I mean, who would do that? You name someone in professional sports that would do that. You know? I think he tried to expose Kobe in a way that he shouldn't have. You're the head coach. And you're the guy that sits in the locker room and tells the players, this is a circle, and everything stays within the circle because that's what team is about. But you as the head coach open it up, and now you go out and you try to belittle, at that time, probably one of the greatest players in the game.
So, Jason, why do you think he's doing all of this right now?
Well, that's the part that I struggle to make sense of, because this play, this moment we're talking about for Phil Jackson, deciding to drop the play for Kukoc and Pippen not being in, is something that has been talked about for, at this point, generations. I mean, if you're Scottie Pippen, you've had generations of basketball fans that have been asking you questions about this for how many years at this point, and plenty of time to respond. To just now get this response so far out of left field seems so strange to me. And even when you listen to the words he said, and Scottie is very articulate. He's worked for us for a long time. I mean,
I was going to say, he's been on both sides of this, as a player in front of the microphone, as someone paid to do this in front of cameras at our network.
And for him to come out and say that writing a book about or throwing Kobe Bryant under the bus, like, there's two separate conversations. Should a coach do that? That's one conversation. Is that racist by some level? Like, I don't understand how he's correlated that into being. It's got to be more than that for him to come out with that accusation. It's just so far out of left field. It's so late, and it's so poorly supported with anything he just said in his statement that I'm lost on why we're going there.
And you pointed this out earlier, that we're likely going to hear and have others from that Bulls team, have other people that have known Phil Jackson, asked a lot of these questions about Phil now, because that's what we do in this situation. But it's not to diminish what could be Scottie Pippen's truth. I don't know enough about the relationship to comment one way or another if things happened there. That's really not my charge in this spot. But again, it's the what got us here, because the difficult part about this is we do know Scottie is out promoting something. We also do know that Scottie suffered a very personal loss in his life only a couple of months ago, losing one of his sons tragically. Because we did The Last Dance. I mean, we treated The Last Dance like a sporting event last summer. And for this to not have come out in this way then, and for this to now be aligned at a time where he is promoting something, it's going to make everyone look at this and wonder, is this something that is done out of a, you know, hope for opportunity? Is this grounded in all the truth that we want? It makes it a confusing vessel for this, because we see it as attached to something that he is outselling.
At some point, the response we get from other people will be so significant, because there are certain people that played on those Bulls teams, Steve Kerr, for example, that has never held back his thoughts and feelings when it comes to race relations in this country. You've got to believe that that's one of the first asks everybody that is out covering the Warriors in any capacity is trying to get access to Steve Kerr to say, hey, what's real here? There are people that have built up a lot of equity and trust with the media and with the NBA culture over the course of the last 20 years that were involved around those teams. They're not going to be asked really difficult questions. And if we can hold judgment on that portion of it, because we'll get more indication of it, but this isn't going to go anywhere.
No, it's not. And there are the two parts of that, because you're right. I thought of, you know, he mentioned Kobe in this, so my immediate thought was, well, Shaq was coached by him too, and Shaq's a pretty prominent media member right now who's on a show that is famous for not really having much of a filter in the way that they talk about these things. But you're going to have all those voices weighing in on it. But I also see another conversation going on about people looking at Scottie and wondering what's wrong here, like why all of a sudden this comes up, wondering if he's well. And again, I don't speculate on any of those things because I don't know here, but it just seems so out of turn. And maybe you're right. Maybe you do get fed up at some point. Maybe you get to a point where it doesn't matter anymore, but all the factors that we just mentioned here make the picture really cloudy around Scottie Pippen right now.
And important to get some of those answers, because the other side through all of this is, like, if this is Scottie's truth, then certainly you want to be there to let him to voice that truth. We also do have to acknowledge that the accusation has real damage to Phil Jackson. Right? So, like, I would expect to hear from Phil at some point, too, because through all of this process, transparency, something I talk about all the time, I feel like transparency is going to be key in trying to get down to the bottom of it. If this is a cry for help, though, boy, I hope somebody can get in there and give him that help.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because Scottie talked about that circle, the locker room, the teammates all there, how that group now responds to this, because this is something that's being elevated outside of that locker room in a very similar way. And so the response is going to tell us a lot from this, but we saw the beginning of this conversation earlier today, again, on the Dan Patrick Show, and we're going to now see it reverberate out here at a time where I did not have on my bingo card for 2020 Scottie Pippen making this much news in the month of June and July in sports talk radio, but here we are. Coming up next, though, something we did see coming certainly after the last couple of weeks, the MLB instituting its policy, Major League umpires going out and checking for the presence of a sticky substance here. And I say it like that because we've talked about spider tack. We've talked about some of these high-end things here. But coming up next, we finally had a pitcher get popped and pulled from a game. And now we're going to wait and see what the ramifications look like. But did the punishment in this case fit the crime? We'll get to that next here. It's Jhené Engel Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Jhené Engel Jr., the podcast.
Giannis and Chris Middleton, Batman Robin conversation appeared to not want to go away. We know Kendrick Perkins really started a lot of this on First Take. So we'll get to it in a few because Quentin Richardson joined us earlier. Another guy, 13-year NBA vet, who brought up, I think, the comparison that's most apt to kind of help us digest this relationship right now in Milwaukee. Jason Fitz also apparently has some strong words for Coach Budenholzer. Jhené Engel Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Jason Fitz hanging out for Jhené today. And Jason, I don't know why you got to go after Coach Bud. Like, life's hard enough for that guy right now. He's probably still on the hot seat, even though they're in the Eastern Conference Finals. He always looks like he just finished crying and then wiping his face off in the bathroom so no one would notice. Like, he's got a lot going on right now.
Two things. You presume when I say I have strong opinions that it's negative. Maybe it's not. Also, have you ever seen the animated show Hoops on Netflix? Go ahead and take a second and Google Hoops if you haven't. And tell me that it doesn't look just like, I mean, the coach in Hoops looks just like Coach Bud. I'm just saying, just like Coach Bud. Everybody, you know, take a second and Google
that. There's a lot to digest in there.
But I got takes on Bud. Yeah,
Now I'm wondering is if Jason Fitz is an opponent of Mike Budenholzer like a lot of other people are, or if now that I want to commission this, is Jason going to be one of the people that bangs on the table for him to save his job, thus making him one of hashtag Bud's buds?
Yeah, definitely. Well,
It feels like the t-shirt for you there. I don't want the answer right now, Jason. I want you to wait.
I'm going to give you a tease.
All right.
Not only am I going to give you something unexpected with Coach Bud, I'm going to give you something unexpected with another prominent coach in the NBA.
I don't like when you did this little thing with little your circle, finger here. People listening on ESPN circle. Radio, Jason just doing this gentle little finger circle at me. It is very unnerving right now. So I'm going to move away from I'm calling HR soon if you keep doing that.
Wow. I'm just giving you a little.
No, it's like, again, I can't imagine what this is like for the listening audience right now that just heard me threaten you with HR and then have that be your response right now. So I am going to save your job, Jason, and instead talk about sticky stuff on baseballs because, again, I cannot talk about these headlines without signing like a toddler. I know. I laugh every time. I don't feel good about it, but here we are, Jason. Here we are. All right. You good?
I'm good. I'm professional.
Right. So here's
totally
what we
professional.
Got. We finally
have a bunch of whiny pitchers that need to just get the hell over it. Oh, right. Sorry.
Can
wait,
I,
no.
Can
go
I
ahead,
read,
set it up.
Can
set
I read the
up.
Headline
yeah.
first here?
Go ahead, set it up.
Seattle Mariners pitcher Hector Santiago was the first pitcher to be ejected under Major League Baseball's new policy regarding sticky substances used to doctor baseballs. You know, spider tack had become this popular thing here, but it was the fifth inning of Sunday's doubleheader opener against the White Sox. Umpires expected his glove, and the veteran came out and said he only used rosin because it was a humid day out there. The umpires, this is a quote from Hector Santiago. Quote, the umpire said he felt some sticky stuff on the inside of my glove. All I used was rosin. I used it on both sides, trying to keep the sweat from dripping down to the hands. Now, Jason, they're going to look at this after the fact, try and decipher the substance, and I have a feeling this is going to go a long way in determining because there are now a 10-day suspension tied with this, and the team is not allowed to replace your roster spot. So there's a long list of stuff we have to get through, but does any of that change your stance on these whiny pitchers?
Number one, I've never felt more athletic than I do as a fiddle player because God knows I love me some rosin. All right, rosin up that post. See, it's same thing, same rosin. There we go. So I feel like I'm an athlete. Number
Devil
two.
Down to Georgia reference for
thank
the day.
You very,
count it,
thank
put
you
it on
much.
The board.
What's the rule say? Rule 3.01. This is quote, no player shall intentionally discolor or damage the ball by rubbing it with soil, rosin, paraffin, licorice, sandpaper, emery paper, or other foreign substances. That's the rule that has existed for 100 years. Now, they're just now enforcing it. But what did he say? All I used was some rosin. What's the second item it says you can't put on a baseball? Rosin. And they were all warned a week ago, we're going to start checking for it. So at some point, you got to not be the idiot that does exactly what you were just told you can't do.
All right. I want to respond to a very red-faced Jason
Fired
Fitz
up.
Right now, but I want to let Jeff Passan do it first, our ESPN MLB insider, who's as level-headed as they come. He was on Greeny earlier today and talked about the gray area that he perceives around Major League Baseball in this rule.
You know, Santiago's particular situation, Greeny, highlight this very weird gray area. Let's say Hector Santiago was sweating and had rosin on his arm, and the sweat and the rosin dripped down his arm and into his glove hand. Now, I'm not saying that this is what happened, but he said, I was using only sweat and rosin. And if he's telling the truth here, and that's how it got down into his glove hand, and the violation was that it was in his glove, man, that is, you know, it just shows how difficult enforcement of this actually is when the umpires don't know what they're looking at. They're just looking at it by touch and by feel, and in some cases by smell, oddly enough. And Major League Baseball is allowing the umpires to be the judge and the jury here, and 10-game suspensions are coming.
I mean, but at the same time, Mike, they bag the glove. They send the glove off. Somebody looks at it, right? Like, so I'm presuming there's some level of checks and balances in the system. And realistically, I hear what Passan's saying, but the rule specifically says you can't use it. And, you know, I talked to J.P. Arencibia on Spain and Fitz last week, the great show on ESPN Radio from 7 to 9 p.m. J.P. was a catcher in the bigs for years, and he talked about, like, all players have, like, as a catcher, he had a little spot in his leg where he could get a little rosin on his fingers so that he can control a ball to throw to second base if somebody was stealing one, to make sure he had good traction. Why is it we don't hear any of those guys talking about it? Like, players in the outfield notoriously have little sticky areas. And as JP mentioned, it impacts everybody. But I only hear pitchers complaining about it.
Well,
and
I mean, I can understand pitchers because the lion's share of their job is control with this specific area. I know everyone else has involvement with it at a certain point, but it would be like saying, well, a receiver who occasionally touches the ball during a game versus a quarterback who touches it on every play, and those two being judged differently.
But at the end of the day, we've seen this rule change for a week. We've still seen no hitters over the course of the last week, and we've seen one pitcher busted for it. So as much as he wants to come in and say, ah, I've just got rosin, like, nobody else has had this issue over the last week, and we've still seen dynamic pitching.
I will be interested to see how they continue to legislate this going forward, because the one thing I know you mentioned in the letter of the law, rosin's in there, but we know that's really not what this rule is here to combat, right? It was these high-level things, spider tack, all this stuff that really went above and beyond an increasing grip to a point where spin rates were just out of control. How does this become legislated going forward when it starts to settle in? Because right now you're in the hardcore enforcement phase. We're early in this summer. They got to set the tone. The umpires are probably going to go overboard like we see every year in the NFL when you've got a new officiating policy that you want to go all in on. That first month of the season, flags everywhere. We're making sure everybody knows it. When it settles in, does a situation like this with rosin all of a sudden go further down the list? We'll get to more of that later, but coming up next, Batman, Robin, comic book characters, it all leads us back to one familiar place in sport that maybe needs to start getting a little more uncomfortable. We'll do that.
Are we wearing tights while we do that? Batman, Robin? You said uncomfortable. Go ahead.
We'll do that after this word from 5-Hour Energy. The people of 5-Hour Energy don't deserve the image of you in tights being associated with this.
Well, look, there's nobody at this company that knows more about 5-Hour Energy than this guy. I mean, I'm just a consumer. Let's go. Where do you think this comes from?
There's nobody that knows more about wearing tights than me, so I think we've got this covered collectively.
Does that make you Batman or are you Robin?
Sunglasses, sunscreen, beach towels, cooler. Here's another summer essential for you. No, it's not leggings.
Robin tights.
It's okay, not Robin tights. It's 5-Hour Energy shots. Listen, summer doesn't last forever, so make the most of it with the alert, energized feeling that comes with 5-Hour. It comes with tons of fun summer flavors like Tropical Burst, Watermelon, Cherry, which is my personal favorite. That's been saving my life since college. 5-Hour Energy Shots are the perfect travel companion, too. They're light, portable, take just seconds to drink, so you can keep going where you gotta go. For more information and to stock up for all your summer adventures, head over to 5HourEnergy.com. That's 5HourEnergy.com. Who's Batman? Who's Robin? And should anyone care? Next on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Jason Fitz hanging out with us in place of Chinee Igumike, who is off fulfilling her responsibilities and obligations to the Los Angeles Sparks. And shout out to the WNBA, by the way. Did you see this headline from earlier, Jason, that the WNBA put out that 99% of their players are now vaccinated. Every team is above the threshold of vaccinated teams that rolls back some of the policies there. And it should not surprise us at all that once again, the W is outpacing every other league in leading in certain areas.
And this is going to be my time again to remind NFL fans to start paying attention to those numbers, because as multiple teams have talked about, even through OTAs, there is a competitive advantage to having those thresholds met for your team. Like, you're allowed to have different practices, different meetings, all of these things. So pay attention to what your team's doing, because it will impact the way they go into training camp this fall. Like, that's going to be incredible.
Yeah. We're going to be having a conversation coming up here in about 10 minutes about what we saw, the entire debacle with the NC State baseball team in the College World Series over this past weekend, and how, you're right, college football, the NFL, everyone who is getting ready to play again should be looking, like we said last year, looking and learning from what other leagues are seeing and going through right now. What just happened can offer a lot of people a word of advice and a cautionary tale. As unfortunate as it is for the NC State team, and as badly as I feel for those players involved in all of this, from a sports sense, because this is quickly becoming a sports decision, there's a lot to take note of. So we'll get to that in about 10 minutes here on Chiné Ngolick Jr. But Jason, I want to play you this sound. Kendrick Perkins, our ESPN NBA analyst, was on First Take earlier today, and he went back to a point that he's made a couple of times over the course of this postseason about Giannis and Chris Middleton, because what we saw in Game 3 of that series against the Hawks, they went and they returned serve. They got a win at State Farm Arena, and it came again off a huge fourth quarter from Chris Middleton, who 0 for 9 from 3 in Game 1, a brutal performance that we said they wouldn't replicate, and he has delivered. And here was Kendrick Perkins making a point yet again that he has made about the relationship between Giannis and Middleton.
If you were watching the game, then you can't sit up here, come here this morning and say, oh no, Chris Middleton don't look like the Batman. Chris Middleton don't look like the more skilled player. Chris Middleton don't look like he embraces the moment when it matters the most. I'm not saying overall career. I'm talking about right now on this Milwaukee Bucks team, Chris Middleton is the Batman.
And Jason, that Batman-Robin conversation has kind of dominated for a while here. And has this not gotten to the point where we look at this situation and what is working for the Bucks right now, 2-1 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals, right, wrong, or indifferent about how they got here, in saying that, all right, for this team, it works. Much the same way back in the day we had to have that conversation about, hey, with LeBron James, he's going to find the open teammate. He's going to find the right player down the stretch of these games and make the right decision there, because that's his gift. That's part of his skill set. Does that not work as a similar explanation for what we're seeing now with Giannis and Middleton?
Yeah, and I guess I'm curious why Giannis has to be anybody's Batman in this situation. Like,
well, I think that's what the standard we typically have held stars to, right? Is we treat them all the same, and we say if you are the biggest star on the court, you should own every one of these pivotal moments, because that's how we apparently grade this.
But the only way the Bucks, not just right now, but sustainably for the next several years, are going to be great, in my mind, and be better than Brooklyn, is if it's not just Giannis. And I'll go back to my 80s wrestling fandom. I have never hidden my love of all things, especially late 80s pro wrestling. Like, there was a tag team, Mike, and you're too young to remember this, but it was the Mega Powers, all right? It was Hulk Hogan and Macho Man together. And realistically, was Macho Man the star that Hulk was, even though I preferred Macho Man? No, Hulk was the bigger star. But realistically, when they came together as the Mega Powers, they were the Mega Powers because they both came to equal footing to be this, like, epic concentration of you can't stop the two of them together. Why can't that be the situation for the Bucks? Yes, there is a Hulk Hogan in this situation, but when Macho Man's at his best, tag team can't be beat.
See, now you've got me down a rabbit hole, because unfortunately, one of like my more embarrassing moments around anyone involved a Hogan. It was Brooke Hogan, the daughter of Hulk Hogan, who is one of the people on the show Hogan knows best. Obviously, she's been a big public personality in her own right, but I met her after a Darius Rucker concert one night. And listen, I may have, you know, had a few drinks here and there, a few adult sodas in that time period. And I was just sitting there chatting with her, and I made some reference and hit her with like a, oh yeah. And she's like, that's Macho Man Randy Savage, not my dad. What the hell's wrong with you?
One of the few people you'll ever meet that can say my dad can kick your dad's butt, and knowing both of those fathers that would be involved, I think probably right. Like Hulk Hogan can beat up your dad. Like, it's rare for you to lose that.
Yeah,
argument.
No,
like,
it is.
My dad was going to get his butt kicked by everybody. Your dad, not typically. But, you know, a little Hulk Hogan action there.
That's a tough one to come back from here now. But leaving pro wrestling tandems aside here, as Jason is now trying to have my dad assaulted by Hulk Hogan, apparently.
I'd pay good money to see that go down. No, I mean, just to see the fight. But my point being, Like, we don't have to put Giannis in the same box that we put every other star in.
But I think that's just it. We haven't always done this to every star, but it's the way that we look at Giannis, because we've seen Giannis trying to almost prove a point, shooting as many threes as he had. Like, they talked about his three-point percentage in the broadcast. It's like 17% for the postseason. I was more thrown off by the fact that he has shot 54 during the postseason. Because, again, we look at Giannis's game and say, yeah, it'd be great if he developed that, but that's not where he's there yet. And the whole point about this situation with Chris Middleton is, the best version for the future would be if Giannis develops all of these things, if he becomes such an unstoppable threat the way we've seen when LeBron James makes shots from outside the arc. And Lord knows that's gotten better as his career's gone on. But those games, you just chalk it up and say, that's over. Like, the other team can't do anything if he is going to hit those. But in the meantime, for Giannis, while that is not yet his game, you get to the postseason, it's got to be, all right, you got to lean on what we do best. And Chris Middleton at the end of games right now, offensively, is more versatile. He's what they do best. And I thought Quentin Richardson brought up a comparison that works well in this situation when he joined us earlier in the show today.
I feel that the way they play is great. I mean, if you look over the history of the league, I mean, Shaq, you know, guys need each other. Shaq needed Kobe, Kobe needed Shaq. At the end of the games, we all know that Shaq wasn't the greatest free throw shooter. So at the end of the game, Kobe was basically, you know, the guy that shot jump shots and made different plays. I mean, even as recent as LeBron James in Cleveland, you know, Kyrie took that big shot in Golden State to hit that shot. And everybody knew that, you know, LeBron was the best player. It wasn't really a challenge of that. So, I mean, I don't understand why we have to do that with Giannis.
Now, calling Giannis a big would be disingenuous, so I'm not going to, that's a bridge too far for me. But recognizing the limitations of his game and the skill set that Chris Middleton has being more valuable at the end of games in those spots, to me, is a fair and, I think, realistic place of where we're at with these two.
Also speaks to the head coach that's created a culture where, frankly, the star knows that in that situation, deferring is the best strategy for the good of the entire team, and creates an environment where both guys feel like they're on equal footing to make the plays at the end. Part of, like, we're in this thing where every time the Bucks lose a game, we decide that Budenholzer is the problem, when reality speaks to what they've accomplished as a team and as an organization. And every time the Clippers dig themselves in a hole, we're like, oh, don't worry, Ty Lue's got the adjustments. Well, last time I checked, the Bucks have been in holes and they have adjusted through it every single time, or they've been stubborn enough to get through it. Either of those are a testament to the coach, because that's the culture being created.
Well, I don't think you can just, like, what about all those things? I think it's fair to say this. Mike Budenholzer is not a coach that's ever been known for making great in-game adjustments. I think we can say that for about the vast majority of his coaching tenure here. But you can give him credit and say he has created an environment that's conducive to letting those stars be themselves enough to defer in spots where we usually judge the hell out of them and shame them into being the one with the ball in their hands.
At some point, though, if what you're doing is working, you don't need to adjust. And having the patience to trust that it's going to come together has worked for them this postseason. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's probably,
they were down
2-0
in Brooklyn, and they came back, and we would be giving.
Because you can bring up the Brooklyn series, but we're not going to draw too many conclusions for that, because injury was a huge deciding factor in that series, and the Bucks deserve a lot of credit, but so does store hamstrings and rolled ankles.
I'm just saying, Game 7 was won by who?
My God, Jason Fitz. Game 7 was won by the Bucks. Budenholzer was right. But coming up next, those decisions are apparently cut and dry for Jason Fitz, and he can be dug in on those. But what do we do with NC State and what went on in the College World Series? The message that got sent with that decision late in the night that might echo all the way through the fall. Next, here on ESPN Radio.
Today in Golic Jr., the podcast.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll talk to ESPN NBA analyst Doris Burke in the next hour. Get ready for more NBA action coming up tonight. Clippers and Suns in the Western Conference Finals. Mike Golic Jr., Jason Fitz filling in for Chinne Agwemeke today. And Jason, for anyone that doesn't know, Jason lived in Nashville for over 2 decades, knows the area really well. And you're certainly pretty well-versed in the Vanderbilt program athletically overall, Jason, but especially in baseball, something that school has done very well for a long time here. This has to be the strangest way that Vanderbilt's advanced to the College World Series in the school's history.
And look, I mean, Tim Corbin has done an incredible job building a great baseball program at Vandy, so I take nothing away from the fact that they are where they are getting into the College World Series final, but this does not come in any normal state, as obviously they were done and they are now in and advancing because NC State has been eliminated. So Vandy is able to find themselves in the College World Series final, and they're able to get a little rest in the process too. So they're going to be able to bring out their best pitchers. Leiter's going to be able to pitch for them. They'll bring their best of the best out, and they'll be coming out with fresh arms and fresh bodies. So, like, this all worked out to be a great advantage for Vandy. Again, taking nothing away from the consistency of that program. They are in this conversation every single year. So it's not like miraculously a Cinderella situation has arisen. But you can't take anything away from the fact that it's a very weird situation that got them where they are.
It's bizarre. And for anyone that missed it here in the wee hours of the morning after Vanderbilt and NC State had played in a game, NC State had stunned Vanderbilt and gone up 1-0 in that series to start things off here before a series of positive tests began to pop up in the NC State locker room. It ended with four players testing positive for COVID-19, among them some players that had reportedly been vaccinated on that team, and ended with a statement by the NCAA at about 2 o'clock in the morning Eastern saying that it would be a no-contest win for Vanderbilt and that they would advance. We had the image in that game that NC State went out and played shorthanded, where you could see them lining up there, NC State with limited numbers of scholarship players going out there and trying to play after this had originally taken place. And Jason, you and I both deal primarily in college football. I won't pretend that we cover the College World Series the way the likes of Ryan McGee and Clinton Yates and our great colleagues here that do a great job around baseball and love that. But what we saw pop up here, because on the other side, you mentioned Coach Holman. He told ESPN that most of that team had been fully vaccinated. Vanderbilt is requiring its students to be fully vaccinated by the fall semester. But we know that is going to be something that differs based on private school, based on state school, as we look around here. But it had an absolute effect on the outcome of this. And my first thought and reaction was looking towards football season and saying, all right, for as much as it feels like we're coming out on the other side of this right now, we saw the NFL roll out policies for this fall, and college football, which we work in and had a difficult time wrangling all the different policies from all the different conferences because the NCAA refuses to come in and just have one binding principle for everyone here. I'd imagine there were a lot of college football coaches that looked around and wondered, all right, what is the vaccination rate on our team right now? And are we going to be dealing with something unforeseen like this on Saturdays?
Now that's going to be such a tough part of the conversation because, as we said earlier, and I think needs to be stressed, no matter what anybody thinks regarding the personal decisions, there are rules in place that exist, and there's nothing that's going to change those. So if you're a player on a team and you choose not to be vaccinated, that will change what the team is capable of doing in the fall. Like that's just the way the rules are written. And I'll go back again to the memo the NFL sent out. The very easy explanation is if a team hasn't reached a vaccination threshold, they can only have 15 people in the gym at once working out. If they have reached the threshold, gym can be full. Those are little examples of things that will change the day in and day out work across of all sports when you look at what we're going to see this fall. And that's why nothing is a given throughout this process. And I think everybody needs to really understand that going in. There will be, I mean, it doesn't matter whether NC State wanted to play this game or not. Rules in place. And at the end of the day, they're just following the letter of the law that they've put in place on how they're going to handle
it. And because they've got a responsibility to protect. I mean, we talked about it all the time last year because so many people point and say these are young, healthy players. That is not the case for everybody that works around these programs here. And again, in all of this that we've seen, you're trying to minimize as much risk as possible in this to protect the most amount of people. But what it does boil this down to is these become sports decisions. These become decisions that affect what goes on in the field of play. And while I feel for everyone involved in the NC State situation, and because it's college, we won't know all the specifics of how many people were vaccinated. We won't get as much of a head count as we do in pro sports. It does create a landscape where we look towards the big cash cow in the fall and we wonder how many games we're still going to see potentially affected by this.
Yeah, and you know, for all the people that are coming out and saying, well, that's a dumb rule or whatever it might be, doesn't matter. The rule exists. And that's going to be interesting to see how coaches handle it because, as you well know, Mike, coaches control so much of the life of young players. So trying to figure out how coaching pressure works will be interesting too.
I was going to say, I mean, people talk about dumb rules. We did that for years with testing for marijuana in the NFL. We called it the idiot test at the combine. And as much as I disagree with it, you still had to pass it. This is something that deals with a contagious virus. So it is infinitely more serious in this and the way that we discuss it and is going to continue to be a factor. Coming up next, though, we'll get more into the factors that go into NBA head coaching searches. Ooh. Next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.